All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker for a Friday. Just ahead of the first game of a three-game series between the Jays and the franchise formerly known as the Chicago White Sox. That's not true. I shouldn't say that. We'll be joined by Gordon Beckham.
Be nice.
In a few minutes. I am nice.
No, you're not.
I am nice. You're the one that was slagging the White Sox.
They look like a double-A team. Well,
you're the one that was slagging the White Sox. We have spent a great deal of time this week. And indeed, we've had so much mirth and merriment talking about the Boston Red Sox and the Rafael Devers situation. And, of course, the Red Sox are in San Francisco tonight to take on Rafael Devers, who, I mean, if Bob Melvin had any sense, he'd start Devers at every position. he would have him play all nine positions in the game. I know, but just to poke fun at the Red Sox. Jeff Passan's ESPN's MLB insider. He joins us in Blair and Barker. He has a tremendous article up on ESPN's website, how the Red Sox Rafael Devers breakup got so messy. I tweeted out a link to it. Mr. Passan, great work as always. I admit that there is a part of me, whenever anything involving the Red Sox gets messy, I get a warm, fuzzy, comfortable feeling all over me. It's almost like it's like there are angels getting their wings all over the place whenever a Red Sox situation gets messy. It's a long story, obviously, and it's a great story, but when you were reporting the story, was there something, like, we all suspect things when we see something from a distance, right? We all kind of go, okay, kind of see that. That kind of makes sense. Was there anything in reporting here that really surprised you? Like, maybe was more pronounced than you thought it might be?
Yeah, I think the Red Sox pivot to their model it wasn't alarming because it's kind of replicating what you've seen in other places. I think Milwaukee is a really good example, but Milwaukee is also a really good example of how you can do it without chaos. Mm-hmm. And it starts with that, right? Like, every organization needs to have an operating philosophy, and those philosophies among the 30 different organizations are different, and they have their own little embellishments and what they rely on more and what they lend more weight to. And so I think watching the Red Sox, an organization that was for a long time steeped in scouting, and, you know, that was through Theo Epstein, who has this reputation unfairly, I think, as somebody who is like a big analytics nerd. No, like, Theo Epstein and Andrew Friedman are the two best examples of people who rely heavily on their scouts in addition to the analytical models. But, the Red Sox for a long time were a scout-heavy organization, and that has decidedly changed, first under Chaim Bloom, but then particularly under Craig Breslow. And I think, it finally, like, crystallized to me, guys. And Jeff, you know this feeling when you're reporting out a story and suddenly, like, you have that aha moment. Mm-hmm. It finally just occurred to me, like, there's this organization that's talking about wanting to build a culture as if the culture starts at the bottom and goes toward the top. Culture starts with ownership. Culture filters through management, and culture is adopted by players. That's the way that functional organizations work, that they set specific standards at the top, and they have enough buy-in from the people down at the bottom to go and apply them. And that's what the Red Sox are missing. They're missing continuity at the top. They have cycled through Theo Epstein, Ben Cherington, Dave Dombrowski, Chaim Bloom, and now Craig Breslow since, like, 2012. So that's five different heads of baseball operations in the last 13 years. If you want to build a culture, then why don't you let someone keep the job for long enough to do so? And that at the end of the day, like, Rafael Devers, he screwed up here. I believe that. He did some things wrong along the way. But at the same time, if the Red Sox had the buy-in from Rafael Devers that other organizations do with their players, and maybe you can argue that for $313.5 million, that's the price of buy-in. But Clearly, there's more to the story than that, and it's that I think he felt like he was lied to. He felt like he was wrong. He felt like he lost trust in the organization. And the way that this unfolds, guys, we have seen this story again and again and again with the Boston Red Sox, and that's no accident.
Jeff, one of the things you hear when you sort of poke around, you know, the very Boston sports radio or Red Sox social media, one of the things you hear is this concern that John Henry and Fenway Sports have become much more focused on Liverpool, on their Premier League soccer team compared to the Red Sox. You know, it's just coincidence that Liverpool just today smashed the English transfer record for a player. At the same time, yep, the Devers thing has gone on. Were you able to determine, is there some legitimacy to that? Do you think John Henry maybe, because John Henry, I think, was always kind of a baseball guy, right? I mean, I know he made his money. I believe he made his money. Wasn't it real estate? What was it? He made his money in some sort of algorithmic thing. I can't remember what it was. But he's always kind of been a baseball guy. Do you think he's taken his eye off the ball a little bit here? Were you able to get that sense?
No, I wish I could tell you definitively just how much of his bandwidth is going toward Liverpool, going toward, Fenway Roush, all the different entities that Fenway Sports Group has. I don't know specifically whether he is putting more time, energy, and especially finances into those other parts of the business. What I do know is that the payroll numbers for the Boston Red Sox since 2019 have cratered. In 18 and 19, they were the highest spending team in baseball. They have spent less money every year since then. And last year, the last 2 years, had payrolls that ranked 12th in Major League Baseball. Let me repeat that. The Boston Red Sox had the 12th ranked payroll in Major League Baseball. It reminds me a lot, guys, of the Mets in their Wilpon days before Steve Cohen took over, where you have this giant entity that should be near the top in spending. Because if you're, you know, the crazy thing to me is, if you are looking for advantages, if you are looking for efficiency, is there a greater advantage or anything more efficient than having money in an uncapped sport?
No. I mean, that should be, that's like gold. That's found money.
Yep. And the Red Sox simply have not taken advantage of that built-in inherent advantage. And to me, it's a waste. Like, go out and be the Dodgers, be the Mets, be the Yankees, be that big spending team if you can. And, like, I hate to say it, but they can, and they just aren't.
Jeff, after your article, do you look at Cora in a different way?
It's going to be really interesting, Kevin, to see what the fallout is here for Alex Cora and whether he can rescue this season, because I think we talked about this on the show before. I would venture to say, you know, Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch are probably the two managers in Major League Baseball with the most juice in terms of decision-making and just how much involvement they have in the process. And, listen, if the Red Sox falter again, I'm not sure that Alex Cora's job is necessarily going to be on the line, but certainly the pressure is going to be on him. You know, Chaim Bloom was the one who got a lot of the grief and wound up getting fired, and he was replaced by Craig Breslow. And as much as Breslow screwed up in this situation, there's an argument to be made that, you know, it's the manager's job to get the players on board, and that did not happen with Rafael Devers. There was a fracture in the relationship between the organization and the player. And that was the sort of thing that Alex Cora, I think people were looking at him and hoping that he could repair that, and he was not able to. And if this trade goes down, I don't think it's going to go down like the Mookie Betts deal, because I'm not sure anything can. But if things aren't straightened out here, then, yeah, it's going to be a black mark on Alex Cora's resume.
Yeah, and one of the things that makes me think that it's going to be hard to move on from the story is the fact that you've got this sort of family feud now between Pedro Martinez and David Ortiz.
Yep.
And, you know, both of whom are, Listen, I can remember when people used to say nobody wanted to go to Boston, because there were some racial issues in that city, blah, blah, blah. And there were. But all of a sudden, guys like Manny and Pedro and David Ortiz made a more welcoming environment. They, in some ways, became the faces of the franchise. And now they're going at it. And that just seems to me that that's just going to keep fueling this thing.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility of that. I also think, like, David Ortiz is trying to be a good soldier for the Red Sox organization, still works for him, and Pedro Martinez does not, and has far more leeway to go speak his mind and to tell his truth. And, I think David Ortiz, between what he said to Ken Rosenthal and some other reporters, like, he said, you know, all you have to do is just get in line and you can be part of this organization forever. And there's truth in that. But David Ortiz is also like a one-of-one human being, right? Like just the most dynamic personality you're ever going to meet. That is not Rafi Devers. That's not what he wants to be either. So I think Rafael Devers just wants to go out and play baseball and be who he is, which is a third baseman. Now, ship sailed on that, but at the same time, you want to put him in the best position possible mentally and physically to go out and hit the baseball because that's what he has always done, as well as 10, 15, 20 guys in the whole world.
Jeff, if I'm Kyle Tucker, sell me on going to Boston. Why would I go there?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't if I were Kyle Tucker unless they clear spots, right? Because you look at what the Red Sox do have, and it's outfielders, right?
Yeah.
I look at Rob Refsnyder's a perfect example. Rob Refsnyder kills left-handed pitching. And, when you have Roman Anthony, when you have Willy Abreu, when you have Sidon Rafaela, when you have Jaron Duran, like, there are already too many cooks in the kitchen there. There are already too few at-bats to go around among the four of them. And so I just don't think that Kyle Tucker's a good fit because they have outfielders already. But, hey, I suppose for a guy like Kyle Tucker, you do make room. And if you're going to make the argument, it's that Boston Red Sox have won more championships this century than anyone. And Fenway Park, when the Red Sox are really going, might be the best place to play in baseball.
Does this deal suggest that we may see a more aggressive stance taken by teams before the trade deadline, or is this just a one-off sort of a unique situation that it's standalone?
I think this is going to be the biggest trade of the year.
Right.
Or at least before the end of the regular season or before the trade deadline. Who knows what's going to happen in the winter. But in terms of a player of this magnitude being moved, I don't see anything like this. And but then again, like I had not heard that until it happened that the Red Sox were as vociferous about moving Devers as they wound up being. So there may be some conversations going on right now that I'm not privy to, but I have a hard time believing a player of Devers' caliber is going to move before July 31st.
Jeff, staying in the American League East, who wins it?
I'm sticking with the Yankees at this point. I know they've been playing bad baseball lately, but I still like the depth of that lineup, and I think that Carlos Rodon's really turned a corner this year. Max Fried has been awesome. They're going to get Luke Weaver back, and I think they're going to be aggressive at the deadline, too, and go out and get a couple of the bigger names that are out there. And so just talent-wise and what they've got built up, I know it's not a big lead anymore after the way they've been playing lately, but I still think the Yankees are the best team in the East.
Three teams in the East make the playoffs.
Are you asking me if three or which three?
Both.
Both?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, this is so hard. Probably. Yeah, I think it is probably going to be three out of the East. Yankees, I feel good about at this point. It's like I want to say the Rays, because not just because they're there, but because I think they've figured out how to win. I worry about their bullpen a little bit right now. Manny Rodriguez and Hunter Biggie being down, it's not great. Their bullpen's been such a strength, but I just love the consistency that they get from their starting pitchers. They're all just good. You know, you're not going to see among that group like a frontline starter, but it's like they have a bunch of threes. And if you can have a rotation full of threes, you got a chance to win when you play defense like the Rays do. So I'll say the Rays. I'm rethinking in real time here because I don't have the Jays getting in right now. And I think if I were to pick that third team, I would say the Red Sox, but I don't feel great about them either. It's just the American League is so confusing to me, guys, because nobody's really good. Like yeah. The Tigers are. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I don't look at a team and think to myself, well, that's a team that's going to make a run deep into the postseason. The National League is just, like, it leaps and bounds better than the American League right now.
Are you shifting focus to the National League? Are you surprised Alex Anthopoulos was so openly dismissive?
Yes.
About not making trade? He said, I'm not trading Chris Sale, and more to the point, I want to add to this team. We're not tearing this team down. Like, he gave himself no wiggle room.
No, none whatsoever. But neither did Mike Rizzo when he said we're not trading Juan Soto, and 2 months later he got James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, and C.J. Abrams. You know, we're not trading a guy, the rule should be, unless somebody makes us trade him.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the question. Alex Anthopoulos, there's never a conversation that he has not welcomed. He is a thoughtful and creative executive and is willing to listen to things that others might not and is willing to try and work through deals in ways that others don't. So I don't discount anything from the Braves because of how Alex Anthopoulos' brain works. But if he's going out publicly and saying that, chances are it's true. And that just shows you the Braves, like, they want to win. I don't anticipate that they're going to go and make any big upgrades because that's not really Alex's style either.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to believe it if he says we're not going to trade a guy. And if that winds up happening, then it's going to be clear that they got a deal they just couldn't turn down.
Is Dodgers Padres great for baseball?
Hell yeah, it's great for baseball. I don't like that it takes guys getting hit. But I love how much they hate each other.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's the kind of rivalry that the Red Sox and Yankees used to be, guys. It's not just geographical animus. It's not just the fans that loathe each other. The players actively dislike each other. And to me, that brings out the best kind of competition. You don't need to hit guys in order to hate them or to show them that you hate them. Just beat their ass. Like, isn't that the best way to show that you hate somebody? By absolutely running them time after time, embarrassing them, showing them that you're better? The other stuff, it's just machismo, and it's stupid, and it's unnecessary. And I'm glad that guys are not getting hit in the head. If that happens, it's gone too far. Frankly, Fernando Tatis, getting hit where he did, not great. But that being said, yes, Dodgers Padres is great for baseball.
I love it that managers don't like each other. Roberts went over and pushed.
Yes.
I love it. That's the way it should be. Starts with your two managers. Get after it. That's great.
Like Gibby and Gibby and Jeff Bannister.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Great.
It is good. Hey, Jeff, listen, we appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much.
Awesome.
Terrific job in the Red Sox story. Really, really, really good read, my friend.
Great stuff.
Be well.
Thank you, boys. Appreciate you.
See you, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Too. You too. That's Jeff Passan. He is ESPN's MLB insider. Passan makes a great point, too. Giants and Dodgers, I've always told people that Giants and Dodgers historically has been the best rivalry in baseball, going back to John Roseboro trying to take a bat to Juan Marichal. Like, mm-hmm. We're talking in the 50s, these teams hated each other.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, they were the two West Coast teams. They just despised each other. And it was like trench warfare when they played. I mean, it really was. It was nasty. It was filthy. Felipe Alou used to tell me stories about guys just knew. He said, you knew that stuff was going to happen when it was Dodgers and Giants. Didn't matter what time of year it was, spring training, whatever, didn't matter. Stuff was going to happen. the American League or the National League Central for a while when you played there.
Yeah.
They had teams that hated it. Russ Martin talks about Reds and Pirates. Like, they hated each other.
Absolutely.
Reds and Cubs.
Yeah.
They hated each other.
Like, yeah, that's cool.
It was... But I think Jeff touched on something with San Diego and L.A. It seems it's more personal with Manny. Now, Manny played in L.A. too.
Light candles.
Yeah, like Manny Machado's line today that the Dodgers better take some candles out and hope that Fernando Tatis Jr.'s hand isn't, you know, that x-rays aren't positive. They don't show a fracture. There seems to be a more personal animus between Mike Schilt and Dave Roberts and Manny Machado and just about everybody over there and Fernando Tatis. And the Giants-Dodgers, it's almost like it's kind of there's an organizational history and the fans... I mean, fans die in the stands. I mean, they do. They've had incidents in the stands when the Giants and Dodgers play where people have lost their lives. It can be tough. But Padres-Dodgers just seems so personal.
It's like the little brother has to fight for respect, right? It's just like the,
the
Padres just don't have any respect.
Guy gets called up in his first major league appearance. He dusts Fernando Tatis Jr.
Oh, it's great. I mean, again, you know, they're saying you have to throw him in, which you do to get him out. You got to make him uncomfortable. This is what we do in the West. Like,
there's in and
in,
though.
It's the best division. Like, it's, you know, up and in's different than in.
Correct.
Okay, there's a giant difference.
Correct.
You know, Moises Salou used to tell me that all the time because Mo would stand right on top of the plate, and you know it. He'd get pitched in and scoot close to the plate, right? He'd say, shrink the plate. And I'm like, you're nuts. Dude, never do that. And he's like, yeah, you got to have a pair, basically, to get close to the plate. It was just a little mind game you play with a pitcher. I just love it. You know, it's almost like because the Dodgers are so good that people outside of the West would – it would be tough to watch the Dodgers, right? You got to stay up late, the East Coast. Like, now all of a sudden, when them two teams are playing, and they got to play a lot more.
Well,
in August, they're playing more, hopefully. In the playoffs, they play a lot. You imagine Padres-Dodgers in the playoffs? Like, it would be great. So I just think it's great, sort of that rivalry. And it's, again, I don't think anybody pays a lot of attention to the Giants either. I mean, I know the Giants are good, but it sort of adds that little element of you better. It's like when Donaldson came to the Blue Jays, and now it was like other teams were afraid to pitch into the Blue Jays because you just never knew, right? It's just that little element. Now Machado's there. You know, it's the Tatis Jr. thing, right? You never – I think he's been hit like 8 times in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So
I think he's just hit 4 – has he been 4 times this year by the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think at least three, yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. I get tired of it too. Yeah, and I like it that Roberts don't like the other manager. I like, you know, you start pushing managers. That's a whole different thing. Like, they were saying, I'll meet you in the parking lot. I'll meet you, you know, in the game. It's awesome. I don't know if they did. They probably didn't, but still, it's pretty cool. It just sort of sends a message to your players that we've had enough of this, and I'm going to lead. Like, they were both the first one off the bench, which is pretty cool. That rarely happens, too. It's normally the players, but I don't know. Just adds a little different. I was with the Reds when the Pirates thing, and it just adds a different element. Like, people that didn't play like myself, even though we stunk and the Pirates stunk, you were on your toes.
Yeah.
Somebody's chucking at somebody, you're running after them. Like, so.
And I've always kind of laughed at it because I love Dusty Baker as much as anybody, but I can remember when Dusty was managing against Felipe Alou. And they were pretty, they go back to the Dodgers-Giants rivalry themselves, but they used to get in some dust-ups.
Yeah.
And you know, Dusty's a nice man, a lovely man. Dusty could be a mean SOB when he wanted to. As a man, like his teams would throw at
him. I've heard him say things to managers that I didn't even know those words existed.
Yeah.
And I was right behind him. It's fun. That makes it. I know you don't want to see anybody get hurt because you know how good the players are. Yeah. You never want to see anybody getting hit in the hand. And hopefully,
it's always
okay.
A good player, right? It's not going to be the 23rd guy in the roster who's going to get whacked.
I like it that Ohtani took 100 in the rib and basically just said, "You guys, I know why I'm wearing it. Let's move on." Yeah. I like that. Like, it's just part of it, and it's not the end of it.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no.
And it's going to go up a notch, too, if they're playing in the playoffs and the Padres trying to beat the big brother of the Dodgers. And it adds a whole different part of it. And, they should have beat them last year, too. And it's like,
Well, that's the thing with The fact that the Dodgers have gone on to win the World Series, the fact that they have Ohtani, like, it's just, it's changed now. The little brother thing with San Diego is even, I think, is even more pronounced. You know, the Giants at least can say, hey, we won, you know, look at the World Series. Yeah. We won, you know, it wasn't so long ago where we were winning the World Series every other year. So we, at least some of us, have some rings here. There's, you know, there's some World Series.
Padres don't care. The Manny Machado don't care. I mean, he wasn't playing when I was having that. That's the point, right? It's like the players that are there now want to be respected. I just, you know, the Dodgers think they should get away with everything, right? How dare you think that we're throwing at Tatis Jr.?
I do love Manny. How dare you? I do love Manny Machado.
Oh, I do love it that he said, boy, you better light some candles, because if you don't, we're chucking at your ear. I mean, that's basically what he said.
That is exactly.
That's what he said.
That is exactly
what he said. I love baseball.
Yeah,
that's great, especially when it's like that. You got grown men.
Well, the weather's
who are just
to get
tired
a hot
of being grown men. Like, they just, you know, they're swirly, and you know, you probably went 0-for-4, and just your bat don't feel right, and you're like, I'm just so tired of hearing this knob talk, and you know, it's just, they've had enough. Yeah. You know, Dave Roberts, you know, he could probably beat a little bit of that. You know, look at us, we're the Dodgers kind of thing. I just don't like that push. You know, I was seeing like Dusty. Imagine if somebody pushed Dusty Baker. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know if I'd handle that very well.
Something you don't
see often, right? A manager getting pushed by another manager.
Yeah,
we just saw it again. It's like
I try to think it back to, you know, we've seen Schneider get into it with the Yankees bench a couple of times. Mm-hmm. The Jays got into it with the Red Sox a little bit, but I'm trying to think of like Gibby and Buck Showalter were always. But that was more Gibby, like, poking the bear, right?
Oh, yeah, sure,
it was more Gibby kind of,
like that. Yeah, invent the game. Change the rules on me, did you?
Yeah, and he and Bannister, Jeff Bannister,
they hated each other. Oh, that's no question.
They absolutely
despise each other. Oh, they can't stand each other.
I don't think Buck and John, I don't think John just had fun with Buck, and I think Buck did too at the end of the day. Like, Buck Showalter liked, he enjoyed that people thought he invented the game.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did.
Yeah,
you know, and he kind of had fun with it, but yeah, John.
The John up and in thing, Bannister, you could understand.
There we
that.
Go. We're watching it in TV again. Mike Schilt comes out.
Yeah, I like it.
And the other thing I've got to say about Mike Schilt, God love him. He's the easiest person to lip read in the history of baseball.
I mean, I would love playing for him. Just the way he talks about his players, the way he's got his players back. You know, again, it's sort of like when you're on the Padres, you're looking for that last piece.
Yeah,
maybe it's the manager. Yeah. Right, the manager you need. I just don't like that. Dave comes over and pushes him. I don't know about that, man.
And Dave kind of—he's not exactly running towards him, is he?
It would take quite a few grown men.
Anyhow,
but that up and in thing around your hands, boy, up around your chin, your face.
Yeah.
As hard as they throw, right? I mean, they're not pitchers anymore; they're throwers, and you're trying to pitch in, and you're. You know, he acted like, I didn't do it on purpose, eh?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. I mean, you will get the slugger thrown at your ear.
Tell you what, though. You know what?
If he
earned a little extra respect from his teammates there.
I mean, if everything lines up and it's, you know, baseball gods don't have anything to do and can line that up where those two teams are playing in the biggest games of the year, boy, wouldn't that be tremendous? I don't know. I'd love to see it.
Well, I mean, one thing we know, the baseball gods haven't been working very hard at getting wins for the Chicago White Sox, that's for sure. And the White Sox are in Toronto to open a 3-game series against the Blue Jays tonight at the Rogers Center. Gordon Beckham, the former White Sox second baseman, current TV analyst. He joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. It is the stretch drive, the home stretch, whatever you want to call it, of Blair and Barker for this week. And we'll be doing Blue Jays talk tonight following the Jays game against the Chicago White Sox. Grant Taylor on the mound for the White Sox. He is one of, I believe, 10 rookies on the White Sox roster. And he was the organization's number 6 ranked prospect. So he'll be starting for the White Sox against Spencer Turnbull, who will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. And I mean, again, I guess effectively, Spencer Turnbull gives you as much as you can get from him, and then you go to the bullpen.
There you go. With the lead.
Hopefully. Jose Berríos gets the start on Saturday. Chris Bassett on Sunday. Of course, this after Kevin Gausman coming off a shaky outing against the Arizona Diamondbacks on Thursday. So we mentioned the White Sox have 10 rookies on their roster, including tonight's starter. Of course, you know the White Sox are in the middle of a rebuild. Let's bring in Gordon Beckham, former White Sox second baseman, current TV analyst. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker today. Look, 10 rookies.
Happy to do it.
10 rookies on this roster. What would constitute a good season, do you think, for the White Sox right now?
Well, I mean, I think a good season would be growth, not only just not amounting in just more wins, but just say growth in terms of who they are. These young kids finding out who they are as a player, who they want to be, like in having that first, getting their feet wet in this game, which can be very difficult. So for me, it's just like finding some growth and seeing some metrics that say, hey, they got here, whether it was early or late, but they had a taste of the big leagues, and they also had some growth, whether it be offensively, defensively, on the mound. There was just some metric that you could see at the end of the year. It's like, okay, I'm glad that they got that feel and that they're moving into 2026 with kind of as much as the record might weigh this down, just a rosy outlook a little bit of what could happen. And I think that the fans would obviously – in Chicago would appreciate that too, to have some sort of good-looking team to look forward to in 2026.
Gordon, where is Luis Robert Jr. at in his career?
Yeah, I mean, Luis is he's obviously not played up to his standards or the White Sox standards, what they expect from him. But I think that having watched a pretty good amount of games over the last month, doing the color, you know, he plays an excellent defense. He steals a lot of bags when he gets on base, and he's just not hitting like he normally does. And I think that you can attribute some of that to the fact that he's been thought about as trade bait for the last, 9-10 months, maybe even middle of last summer. He's been kind of on the trade block. I don't think that you can attribute all of it to that, but that definitely is probably playing in his head a little bit. And I would say, he's still young. I don't think that this is like the end of the road for Luis Robert. I think that it's just, he makes this team better. I know we're not playing very well. Our record's not very good, but our team is better with him on the field. And he does a lot of great things, as a defender and on the base path. So, you know, it's just the bat just hasn't been there, guys. I mean, I don't know what it is, but hopefully he can start hitting like he normally does, and see where the end of the season where he's at.
Gordon, you know as well as anybody, good teams are trying to find their core, or they have a core. Is there a couple of names with the White Sox sort of that are those center point cornerstone names that you could sort of hang your hat on when it comes to the core of the team to where they're trying to start win baseball games?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, when you think of core, you probably think of position players. That's really, in my mind, what you have to have every year in, year out. But I would say that a lot of the core is this young pitching staff. I mean, they really, I think that they're all signed for under $9 million. So it's like they're making no money. They're learning on the job. And they're all pretty good. Like, you know, they definitely have some excitement. And then you also see, position player-wise, Miguel Vargas is starting to come on. You know, he was a trade that we got last year in the middle of the summer, and that three-team trade with the Cardinals and the Dodgers. But he's really come on strong. And obviously it's easier to hit when you've got people around you hitting. He's hitting without a lot of help in this lineup. I like him a lot. I like what he's about. He runs the bases hard. He does the right thing. He loves baseball, works hard at it. And it's been a lot of fun to watch Chase Meidroth as well. I mean, this kid's come up. He's kind of been a second baseman his whole life. He's played a really good shortstop. He's got really good instincts. He does a lot of good things right. I like him a lot. Obviously, Teal's the big name that came back in the Crochet trade. He's been up for just a couple of weeks. He's still getting his feet wet. And another name that I really like is the other catcher, Edgar Caro. This guy has like an advanced approach at the plate, and he does a really good job of having quality at-bats against really good pitchers. And because of that approach, that really plays, and he's so young. He's like 22 years old. So while he might be looked at as the second catcher on the team or like of the future, he is really advanced in terms of his plate discipline. He's working on his pitch framing. That's kind of the thing that's holding him back a little bit right now. But he's really special. He's a guy that I think is going to be in the big leagues for a long, long time.
You know, Gordon, one of the names that I know we miss him this series, at least I believe we miss him this series, but I know he's starting to get a lot of national attention, is Shane Smith, the Rule 5 guy who I believe leads MLB rookies in ERA. He might end up going to the All-Star game. I would certainly think he has a chance. Tell us about him. Because, you know, Rule 5, we've seen this organization, the Jays, have had a lot of success with Rule 5 guys, Rule 5 pitchers, Rule 5 players. But he's really turned into a nice story for the White Sox, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's throwing upper 90s. I don't think he ever really threw upper 90s with Milwaukee when he was with them. Now, I don't have the inside scoop on why he's throwing harder this year, but he has found something with Ethan Katz and his White Sox team. He throws upper 90s. He's got a really good changeup. Teams a lot have been kind of honing in on that changeup, which has kind of opened up his breaking stuff, and the breaking stuff is good too. So he's shown a lot. Obviously, he's going to be with the White Sox moving forward. They're not going to let him go. But he's been excellent, just kind of come out of nowhere. But he's real stoic, real quiet in the clubhouse. But I mean, I it's kind of stupid, but I call him the water buffalo just because he's built so well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is a brick house, and he's just got a really strong base. And because of that strong base, he's able to really do some good things. And he's got this kind of funky motion where he really is real quick to the plate. And because of that, it kind of speeds hitters up. He does a good job of kind of having a little bit of funk to him, but also having the stuff to back that up.
Gordon, what do you think it's go time for the White Sox?
I think that hopefully they're moving in the right direction by the end of this year. Next year will be more learning. And, guys, there's more pitching coming for the White Sox. They got a couple guys in the minor leagues, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, both lefties, both possibly ones, maybe one is a two, but both. I mean, Schultz reminds me of Randy Johnson with a different arm slot, more of a short arm Randy Johnson, and he is nasty. So I think that 27 is probably the first year that they would look to compete, and I think after that, you know, they still got their young core in terms of their pitching staff and all these young guys coming up right now, position player wise. I mean, you know, I think they're set up to start competing in 27. Hopefully they arrive early, but I would say that's kind of the blueprint.
Gordon, really good of you to join us, man. Thanks so much. Terrific insight. We'll
Thanks
see you
lot.
Down at the park.
Yeah. See
you. All right, guys.
Take care. Gordon Beckham is White Sox analyst, former White Sox second baseman. And, a guy who I don't know if I've really talked to him about this, but there were like 2 years in a row that he figured in trade rumors to the Blue Jays when he played.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember?
Absolutely.
He figured in trade rumors to the Blue Jays, which we've had him on a couple of times, and I always say to myself, I should remind him that I used to write that Jays are interested in Gordon Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, 10 rookies. Shane Smith is really a nice story. He leads MLB rookies in ERA. He's had 13 starts this year of 3 earned runs or less. They've got some young arms. But yeah, I think 2027. You know, if you're the White Sox, you've got some ownership things, some ownership questions, and some ballpark questions that are kind of lingering. But I wonder, Kevin, if you're the White Sox and you look at the Central Division.
Yep. It's top heavy.
It's just heavy, even.
You know, like, I don't know if it's heavy.
Well, Kansas City,
I mean, you believe in that every year?
But Kansas City's got a core. They've got Bobby Witt. They've got Cole Reagans when he's healthy. Like, they have that core. Minnesota is kind of the Central's version of Tampa. They always just somehow, I mean, they could have 1,000 guys in the IL and we're going to be a game under 500 or game over 400. And they always seem to find somebody who can throw a bazillion out of the bullpen at the end of the game. I think Detroit, if they handle the Tarik Skubal situation and handle that properly, I think Detroit's set up for a long run.
Yep.
And then, you know, the Cleveland Guardians are the Cleveland Guardians. They've got one of the best players in baseball in Jose Ramirez to hang their hat on. Sometimes I think the Guardians, again, they're almost like the Rays as well. You just expect them to have one of those years where nothing works out. But stuff always seems to work out for them. I don't know if I was the White Sox, I don't know if I'd be sitting there saying, thank God we're in the Central, or God, I wish we were someplace else in the Central.
Yeah, maybe. Look, if the Guardians have a bad year, I don't think that's a surprise. I think if Kansas City has a bad year, that's not a surprise. If I'm a White Sox fan and I get I get the right everyday player in there that sort of could support, you know, the young guys that are trying to learn from whoever that guy is. You get a decent pitching staff, which is what Gordon is talking about. You get you a closer or two that could do that. I'm just saying you can compete in that. I mean, you know, the other teams other than the Tigers probably not going to run away with it. You could be right there with them, right? And most of the time in the American League East, it's either top heavy or a bunch of teams are beating the you-know-what out of each other.
Yeah, and the other,
so it's like,
the other thing with the Central is every team in the Central, with the exception of the Tigers, has got one guy. Like the Guardians have Ramirez. The Twins, when he's healthy, they have Buxton. The Royals, they have Witt. Now, there are other players, obviously, but what I'm saying is that what the White Sox currently lack is that guy.
Yeah. How do you get that guy there? That's the only
Like Kyle Teal, the catching prospect they got from Boston.
I'm not sure he could be the guy, though. You know, you need a guy that's not catching.
Yeah.
Catching and being the guy is hard.
Luis Robert could be, well, I mean, not now, but at one point you thought he was going to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't have any idea what's going on with that. I mean, it's...
I don't either.
I think they're still trying to figure it out, too. Yeah. It's like Gordon talking about, you know, he's trying to invent ways to be nice when you talk about him, right? With a guy that has that much talent, air quotes, it just seems like, for whatever reason, offensively, he just can't live up to it. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's injury. Maybe it's just... it's not that good. Maybe that's the point.
We saw him last year in a series in Toronto where, had I been his manager, I might have yanked him off the field. Remember how he butchered a couple of balls in the outfield?
Well, you can be talented and still not be very good, right? I mean, there is that part of it, and maybe that's where it's at. Maybe it's the team he plays for. Yeah. You know, maybe the behind the scenes, we don't know what's going on there. Who knows? He should have been traded a year and a half ago. Maybe that's it, too.
It can't be that easy to have heard for parts of three seasons that you're going to be traded. But between being on a losing team, underperforming, and hearing almost on a daily basis when you go on social media, you're number one or number two on the list of guys to be traded, that's got to get a little old.
I mean, it's still the list. That's still the name you look up at the White Sox.
Yeah.
It's him. Even when he stinks offensively.
Jim Bowden, go on all those lists, all the national lists put together by people.
Absolutely.
He's still, he's been on that list since... For 2 years, he's been on the list of guys.
And you get to trying too hard, right? That means you'd be traded to a better team. Better teams want you to do well. You try too hard. We know how it looks when people try too hard, right? It just doesn't play out the way everybody wants it to play out. I don't know. Look, I think they're one way. For me anyway, Chicago's not the worst places to play baseball, right? I mean, especially if you're an offensive player, and early in the season, you got to deal with the cold weather after that. If you're on a winning team, we've seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. It could be fun.
The South Side's a little different than the North
leagues.
Side.
The big
but
leagues.
it is the big leagues. Yeah. The White Sox, though, I will go to my grave thinking that the worst thing the White Sox ever did was bringing Tony La Russa back to the team. That just that for whatever reason
set him back.
That set him back. That created all sorts of issues. I you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is I mean his best before date as owner passed about 30 years ago, and I think bringing La Russa back just put the put
you
the
were doing a friend a solid and it didn't work out for
you. Yeah, and you can't
that's
do a friend a solid.
That's basically what happened.
Yeah, and you really can't do that. You you needed somebody who
wasn't falling asleep at the wheel.
Pretty well. Do we have to call the lawyers now or
what? Oh, that'll take so. Because it's facts.
Well, he did fall asleep at the wheel.
I think he did. I read that once.
He did. He did fall asleep at the wheel.
Anyway,
at least I think it was at a red light.
Yeah,
so
it was.
At least the car wasn't moving.
It was good. Yeah.
It's always a good thing. I find anyhow.
That's some things there. Yeah. Hopefully the White Sox be better. You know, I think baseball's better when the White Sox are decent. You don't have to be great, but they're decent, right? It makes that division longer, which is never a bad thing. You know, you don't ever want to go into it thinking, you know, whoever wins or, you know, beats up on the White Sox the most is who's going to win the division.
Who would you rather be? White Sox or Rockies?
I love the Rockies. I'd rather be the Rockies. I'm going to play somewhere that, you know, I'm getting the
brakes
beat off me. I'd rather do it in Colorado.
I'd rather do it while I'm sitting back looking at the mountains I could be out there in another 2 hours.
Look at that. It's July and there's snow on them mountains. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, look at this.
And you could hit one almost to the mountain. Yeah, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I'm 0 for 40, but man, tomorrow I'm going to be up. Going to be up in them there mountains.
Maybe that's how I'd say it.
Maybe looking them for there. Some them there mountains. Looking at some bighorn. Maybe looking at some bighorn out there.
They're all over the place.
No, they are. No, I meant in terms of which team would you rather be?
The Rockies will never be good again.
Yeah, I'm with you.
They stink. Who knows where they're going?
They stink.
Until their owner sells the team to somebody who actually gives a crap.
And their owner makes way too much money, and the fans keep coming out.
Yeah, because it's a beautiful place in the summertime. Yeah. It's wonderful. You've been there in the summertime?
Yeah,
it's tremendous.
I have been.
They packed that place.
Yeah, I have been to many Rockies games. I actually was at the first Rockies home game when they played at the old football stadium. They played against the Expos, and I think the score was like 19-17. It was a 7.5-hour game. It snowed when the game was over.
Oh, it's great.
They're playing at Mile High.
Oh, it's tremendous.
And I remember about it was everywhere you looked, they had the elevation on the board. So, like, to freak visiting teams out, you know, you'd have whatever, 380 feet.
Well, they're doing that for the pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, the pitcher turns around there and goes, man, alive, my breaking ball's not doing much today.
Yeah.
And they turn around and they see, well, you
know,
what
elevation
they're at.
There's so many great, Dante Bichette tells my favorite Rocky story about how they used to take the Blake Street Bombers, him, Vinny Castilla, Ellis Burks, and Larry Walker.
First group.
They'd be out there hitting when the other team's pitchers were out. He said as soon as teams would try to screw him up by changing the routine, and he said we used to have a security guard, and as soon as the other team starters came out, he'd whistle, and he said we'd come out like our cutoffs.
Every time I see Dante at the field, I always ask him the same thing about the Rockies, what's going on there, and he can't believe how much they strike out.
Yeah.
He said, why they can't get a lineup that puts the ball in play more because of how the ball carries there. Put it in play more. You got a better chance of it going to the moon. If you put it in play, you can if you strike out as much as they're striking out. And he always gets chapped every time I ask him. That's probably why I ask him that, because it's funny.
They were a show, man. They were a show.
Tremendous.
They were a show. When they were – the Blake Street Bombers were – they were one of the best shows in baseball at home. They really were. Like, you would go out – you'd go – to batting practice, and dudes would sit in the press box, the batting practice, just to watch how far the balls went. It was amazing.
I think the better question would be, who would you rather be, the A's or the White Sox? The Rockies, I think, stink so bad they may not ever be good again.
I mean, I'd rather be the A's because I think they'll get their act together in Vegas. I'd rather be the A's because I think that division is always. That's kind of a funky division. You know, at some point, the Astros have got to stop being the Astros. The Mariners are always going to get in their way. Texas is Texas.
I think I actually heard somebody on the MLB Network pick the A's to win their division.
Well, every now and then, you got to go outside the box.
Oh, do you?
Way outside the box.
I mean, that's...
Anyhow, that speaking of outside
the box is at.
That's it for us. We're outside the box now until Monday. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk following tonight's game. game against the White Sox, winning edition? Better be.
Boy, better be.
Have yourself a great weekend.